Hello and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here we discuss some real news. The American presidential debate demonstrated Joe Biden is unfit to continue in office. The question arises then as to who is in charge of two major military conflicts. Also, will elections in France and the UK change the course of neoliberalism? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He is a podcaster at The Goggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Marrakesh, we have Martin Jay. He is an award-winning journalist and commentator. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with George in Budapest. I don't want to rehash the debate here. I think everybody's seen it and had commentary about it. But two fundamental things that are close to both of us here, all three of us here in our audience, is that number one, George, about 11 minutes was devoted to foreign policy. Considering the times, that's very little. They basically agreed. But it's something that you and I talked about later. Who's running American foreign policy? Who is behind these two major military conflicts that can only escalate considering the administration? This is really what worried me, is that who's in charge, George?
Well, that's a very good question, Peter, because the truth is that nobody's able to explain who is indeed making the decisions. And the fact is that the United States is now very actively involved in two very serious conflicts, both of which could easily escalate into major global wars. And we saw this man, the man who took part in this debate, and this was quite shocking, that this is the person who's making the fundamental decisions, and all the things that we have talked about, week after week, about the escalation in Ukraine, the dangers that we're getting step by step into a very real confrontation with a nuclear superpower. And this is the man who's making these decisions. And he really was, quite shocking, because it would be one thing that if America was like in the 1990s, when there didn't seem to be any problem at all that anyone needed to worry about. Now there's a great deal to worry about. And so, the issue isn't just simply, well, will Biden, if he's reelected, get to complete his term? But what's going to happen over the next 5 months? I mean, until January? I mean, is this man really competent to make fundamental decisions? I mean, we were talking a couple of weeks ago about, he's signed off on Ukraine using American missiles on Russian territory. Oh, well, that's fine. But that's the man who made that decision, that decision which shocked all of us. Said, well, that was the man who made that decision. Or who was it who made that decision? Was it his wife, Jill? Was it Sullivan? So, we really need to know, because these are big, big decisions that are being made. We want to know who actually made those decisions.
Well, also, George, does Biden have the capacity to understand that he made that decision, or did he forget? Or were words just being put into his mouth? This is very serious here. Martin, I mean, again, looking at these two conflicts, Ukraine and then Israel-Palestine, this would only embolden someone like Benjamin Netanyahu to just kind of traipse his way into American domestic and foreign policy. And of course, if you're the Russians watching that, you're thinking, who's in charge? Who's going to make the decision? Who do we need to talk to? This sends a chill down everyone's spine, because I've titled this program "The West Adrift," and that's what it looks like, Martin.
Yeah, but I think what I've been banging on about for months seems to be ringing true. I've always said that I thought that Trump was going to head towards a big victory. How can that be in doubt now after that performance by Biden, when you look at a guy who is rapidly losing his sense of reality? He oscillates between relatively lucid to detached. It's kind of a on-off switch, what we see on the public stage all the time. The following day at his own campaign rally, he seemed to be more lucid. But if you're Netanyahu or you're Putin, you're looking at this guy and you're thinking, if this guy is going to stand, if he really is going to make it to November the 5th, I think we're looking at a landslide for Trump. I can't imagine a lot of Democrat voters wanting to vote for him. A lot of them, I think, will just not vote. And I think that I put a gilt edge around that prognosis by simply watching the CNN analysis on the night. They willed out all of these Democrats and so-called on-screen, you know, experts, the pundits, and all of them said, this is just too much. It's too bad. The guy's got to be replaced. Now, if the Democrats on CNN are saying that...
But the problem with that, I think nominally speaking, you're absolutely right. But George, these two wars, these are Biden's wars, his administration's wars, and they don't want anyone to interrupt what they're doing, whoever is making the decision. So the possibility, the greater possibility that Donald Trump could come back into power, which may... We really don't know. They didn't talk enough about foreign policy. Trump is smart enough to basically stay away from it. But you know, these people in power, they don't want to be interrupted here. You know, this pest called Biden shouldn't get in the way. The reason why I'm saying that, George, is that it doesn't matter what voters think. It's about who has power thinks. Then that's what makes this very dangerous, George.
Well, I think it is, and there, you know, there's still a long way to go before the election, and one could see all sorts of steps that can be taken to either to do something about Trump or to make sure that Trump stays in line. We know that about a week or so, Trump will be in a courtroom in New York for a sentencing. He has now been convicted of 34 felonies, and you know he'll be facing a judge who's a Democrat, very, very unsympathetic to Trump. It's not at all impossible that he will impose a prison sentence.
George, how more likely is it now, do you think?
Well, I think it is more likely.
I think it's too.
You know, sends him straight to Rikers Island, and you know, he wouldn't be doing anything wrong. He said, you know, he's been convicted, you know, 34 felony counts. That's what happens. You know, you send the person off straight off to Rikers Island. So that's a possibility. You know, he might go easy on him and say, okay, well, I'll keep you in detention in your home, and you're not allowed to travel. Or if you want to travel anywhere, you have to ask my permission or the permission of your probation officer. So that's still a possibility. We also know that if things don't work out with the Democrats, if things don't work out in the House elections, and the Democrats are the ones who are going to be deciding whether to certify a Trump victory, they've already made clear we will never certify a Trump victory. So that's it. That we will never do it. You know, we'll say he's an insurrectionist, and we will never do it. So I think there's a lot of things that can still happen to prevent. I mean,
nothing good.
No, because if people have gone to all the effort, you know, all these criminal charges, all these civil suits, and everything, they're not just going to go away and say, okay, well, that's it. You know, I mean, nothing we can do. Thank you, Mr. President Trump. They're not going to do that. They're going to still continue to keep him out.
But let's stay on course here, Martin. This adds to my concern is that George just gave a few possibilities. There are a lot more out there. Unfortunately, none of them very good. None of them very democratic, by the way. But Martin, if we see even the potential of a Trump victory, or let's put it another way, the lack of a Biden victory. I know that sounds kind of strange because you could have the lack of a Biden victory and Trump is in jail. So it even is more confusing here. What worries me is that people in the State Department, the CIA, the Defense Department say, we got to speed up our timelines here. We have to continue to push our agenda because we don't know if we're going to be doing this in a few months' time. Accelerating, that creates more risk. Go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, all the scenarios that George has underlined all seem to point to chaos on November the 5th. Yep. November the 5th. You know, you've often said yourself, you know, it's not a question of whether Trump will win, it's whether the establishment will allow him to win, will allow him to actually acknowledge those votes in those states. To answer George's question, I think it's pretty clear now from the debate and from all the video footage that Jill Biden is running America. I think she is playing a much, much more prominent role than we gave her credit for. And, you know, Biden doesn't have advisors. I mean, as a journalist, I can see immediately when he did that debate, within seconds, I can see this guy does not have a media advisor. He does not have an ex-journalist of 30 years experience normally who is advising on media, takes him into a TV studio, does the practice run, does all the questions and gets his image and his messaging right. Doesn't have a media advisor. So if he doesn't have a media advisor, I mean, imagine the other advisors he doesn't have. And I think Jill is filling in on all
of
it.
Well, I mean, Martin, I think it's pretty well clear that he was given a lot of prep, but just that if you have that, the lack of mental acuity, all the practice and prep isn't going to help you at all.
Yeah, but I actually think though, after working in television news for most of my life, I think that what he was doing was he was being read a script through his earpiece. And I can tell you that it's physically impossible for any TV presenter to repeat verbatim at the same speed.
I know. It's virtually impossible. You know, but you know, George, I think that Martin is on to something here. It seems to me, and you and I discussed this, I get in my bones, I feel this was premeditated. You know, if he really wants to run, let him, you know, stand his own 2 feet and give it a shot. He failed, interestingly enough, because this is an Obama project that Obama's not very proud of. He's continuing to back him. But I think that everything behind the scenes when it comes to policy, that apparently Joe Biden isn't really involved in, that's what's at issue here. And we don't know who the decision makers are.
No, we really don't. And it was surprising that he had this debate, because when we talked about it many times, when we were discussing the election, we were convinced that there would be no debates, because Biden will say, well, I'm not going to debate an insurrectionist. You know, he's
a felon,
and that's it. I'm not going to do it. And that would have been obviously the sensible thing for him to do, because remember, all the media types, all the Joe Scarboroughs and the rest of them were saying, Biden is so sharp, he's so acute, he's so on the ball, he understands the minutiae of policy so well. And we know this because we talked to him in private and in his thing. So now, having done this, having taken this step, people say, hey, you've been lying to us, you've been selling us a bill of goods all this time. So it does now become a little bit difficult. However, the media are so in the tank with Biden that once they realize that he's not going anywhere, you know, Obama has said he's staying put.
George, you know, I agree. I think I think you and I already talked about it. 48, 72 hours, they're going to figure out what they're going to do. One last thing, gentlemen, before we go to the break. Remember, there is the Democratic Convention. Could be a lot of fireworks there, too. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
Корректировщика сюда одного.
Понял тебя.
Главное выполнить поставленную задачу.
И вот знаете, что рассказать хохлу, что мы криворукие пол Авдеевки сносим не потому, что мы злые.
Потому что если ты не выполнишь поставленную задачу, провалится войсковая операция.
Да. Или сказать, что мы злые, разносим пол Авдеевки, потому что они танки стоят.
Провалится войсковая операция, продвинуться ближе сюда.
Выкурили 4 немцев.
Продвинулись ближе враг сюда, продвинулись ближе к нашим семьям.
Это голову надо включать и страх выключать.
Поэтому пись, стань 200-300, на задачу выполни.
Полы, пока не отвлекай, да, я убью эту группу из 6. Убью и все. Будем дальше делать дело.
Ну, задачу пытался выполнить, понятно.
Нет, да, это нормально все это. Там все лучше слышал.
Теперь вот так гранату через забор кинул, когда я тебе сказал.
Самая главная моя задача – это воспитать людей. Спасаешь
себя. Ебать. Орудие! Вези!
Белый-белый, я вы наблюдаю, что.
Мои птички запускают, и СБС что-то стрелял в прошлый раз с всего подряд.
Все успевает.
Как дирижер.
Вот все успевает.
Будем выходить, как принято.
Спасибо вашему дому.
Игром.
Я понимаю, тяжело, но возьмем очистные и отдохнем пару дней.
Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here we're discussing some real news. All right, let's talk about the election that just started in France here. And in a few days, there will be the election in the UK. Martin, why did Macron call an election? Because, you know, when I think about this guy in high politics coming from nowhere, now he's put into the presidential palace. This guy has learned nothing about politics whatsoever. This guy is erratic. And I'm being told, people on the ground, that if, as they go through this election cycle here, if his party is walloped, there's going to be pressure on him to resign. And getting rid of a French president is virtually impossible. Martin.
It's virtually impossible, but I think we will see some new policies and we'll see a new landscape in France when Le Pen's party wins a landslide, which is what the experts are predicting. And the role of Macron will be very much as a ceremonious president, you know, like the German president or the Italian president. He'll just be required to turn up. And he still have some powers on foreign policy, of course. But, you know, he's made a huge mistake. And he's made the same mistake that Rishi Sunak made, which is that if you call a snap election very quickly, then in theory, you rally more support from your own side, from your own floating voters that might be thinking of leaving you. You know, they quickly, you know, get focused and stay with you. And that's completely wrong. And we know that. So Rishi Sunak has made this mistake. Macron's made the same mistake. In fact, it's pushed a lot of people towards Le Pen's party. And we are witnessing something pretty amazing. I mean, I've been saying to you for a long time that the European elections, which will garner an unprecedented number of MEP, far-right MEPs in the European Parliament, will change the demographics and the functionality of the European Union. But in addition to that, the far-right groups across Europe, the populist groups, which are going to take more power, are going to change completely the landscape and entirely how the European Union functions. You're going to have a new relationship now whereby Le Pen does, as the leader of this party, and possibly even the president, I would imagine in 2 years' time, what she will do is she will basically blackmail the European Union and do what Britain couldn't do, which is to say, we're going to have a whole load of new rules and exemptions for France.
I don't know. Neoliberalism is far more resilient than that.
Let me finish.
And she's this young guy, Jordan Bardella. George, what are your thoughts on that? I did a little bit of research on that guy. Pretty amazing story out of nowhere. And he's 28 years old and he's technically head of the party.
No, I think so. And I don't know really whether Le Pen's party will actually get that 51% of the representatives in the National Assembly that's forcing Macron to name Bardella as prime minister, because it could be that the National Rally will get a plurality, in which case Macron can start playing all sorts of games as to whom he will select as prime minister. Because, you know, it's very complicated. They have this two-round system. So we really don't know, you know, after what happens in the first round, what happens then after in the second round, people will start switching their votes. So, I'm not at all sure they will get that 51%. But also, the National Rally and Le Pen has kind of watered down all of her positions, all of that ferocious anti-establishment views that her father obviously had, but that she had for some time. I mean, you know, all the stuff about, you know, Frexit, you know, France leaving the EU, I mean, France leaving the Euro, France even leaving the NATO integrated military command. I mean, even on Ukraine, she's kind of been all over the place.
Well,
I mean,
George, isn't this the Malonization of the far right?
Exactly. I think it is. So, you know, you gradually become acceptable. So it's like, yeah, I'm for sanctions against Russia, but as long as the sanctions don't hurt France, I'm for sending weapons to Ukraine, but as long as they're defensive weapons, not offensive weapons. So it's very convoluted. You know, if they're going to do well, and I think all the indications are that they'll do well, it's more like, well, because it's not Macron. I mean, that's the reason. Yeah. It's not because there's a particularly strong positive agenda. She's not Macron, and people are sick to death of Macron.
It used to be that would be the case. At least the candidate isn't Le Pen. Now we have it reversed. Martin, you know, one of the things in looking at mainstream coverage here, the boogeyman words, right wing, you know, that's what they always love to invoke here. I'm not really convinced of that. And I look at a lot of these parties since we had the European Union, European Parliament elections. It's more people disillusioned with the neoliberal parties of the center than anything else. I don't see this lunge to the right, or the right pouncing, as they love to say. This is just a disillusionment, and particularly when you look at the UK. I mean, you know, I'm an outsider, way outsider, but when I look at the Labour and the Tories, I just say, what do you want me to decide? I mean, they're just bankrupt of ideas, Martin.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this has to do with the shock of the new. You know, when you look at those parties, what is the main issue in the British elections? It's probably immigration, with the economy as a very close second. And I think it will be the same thing with the French parliamentary elections. Immigration is a huge issue, which those parties that you talked about, those mainstream parties, have shied away from tackling head on now for 10 or 15 years. And now, you know, the infrastructure is starting to crumble. Yep. And people now moving towards Le Pen and Le Pen's more moderate views. I mean, George is absolutely right. Le Pen has de-radicalized over the last 10 years. She was smart. She could see that it wasn't a very clever move to be campaigning to remove France from the European Union when, you know, the European Union gives so much to France. And that would be an anti-vote, probably that would be a negative vote from a number of key groups like farmers. Because farmers in the UK, for example, now have lost a huge amount of money just because of the agricultural subsidies, which the government can't replace. And Le Pen would realise that if she did that, you know, it would actually cause more problems than actually giving her any leverage. But keeping in the European Union gives her more power, gives her more leverage, gives her a broader power base. But look, hang on. You know, she's Eurosceptic, and she's hinted recently to the French press that, you know, we can't rule out a Frexit. We can't rule out a referendum. And this is all part of a blackmail game, which I'm absolutely certain will play out in the coming months. She will argue for a whole load of exemptions, you know, giving priority to French citizens, indigenous French citizens for jobs, for example, and new rules on immigration, border control, which is just exclusive to France. And if the EU doesn't give in to that, then we have a situation whereby she will be forced to say, well, look, I can't do anything about this. I mean, people are saying now we should have a referendum, you know, on whether France stays in the European Union. Now, France, a founding member of the European Union, to imagine that not being any longer in the European Union is unthinkable. That's the end of the European Union as we know it. So I think what happens is, and I've been predicting this in my articles, I think over the coming years, we're going to see a streamlined new European Union evolve, you know, and France will get its exemptions, Germany will get its.
Or, George, they just cave to the status quo. I'm putting my money more on that position than the alternative forces getting their sway, because this is just the nature of neoliberalism. They will crush anything. You can put lipstick on a pig all you want, okay? But they crush you in the end, George.
No, I think that's right, because when you think of immigration, I mean, the immigration policy is set by the European Union. You really can't start playing around with it. The European Union decides immigration, border controls are decided. You can't just simply say, well, you know, we're not taking in any more asylum seekers. We're going to close the borders to asylum seekers. And the European said, no, you can't do that. That violates our rules. Or if you say, well, we're not going to take in our quota of migrants into the EU, he says, well, you can't do that. That violates EU policy. We've seen what happened to Viktor Orban. I mean, they get hit him with fine after fine after fine because he's violating the EU policy. This is the policy that we have set. And that's what happened to Maloney. I mean, Maloney, you know, she said, well, I'm going to close the border. I'm not going to let anyone in. Salvini said the same thing. Well, I said, we're not letting anyone in. But of course, it found very quickly that the EU said, you have to do it because those are the EU policies.
We have the tools. We have the tools.
You have to follow EU policy. And the same goes for the budgetary controls, because again, the EU is going to say, we have very strict rules about debt to GDP ratio. We have very strict rules about the, you know, how big the budget deficit is allowed to be. If you start violating these rules, you know, we're going to make life very difficult for you. Now, Martin is right. Well, yeah, but Japan is going to, you know, use this in order to confront the EU at some point. I don't see it. I mean, she's already, we've seen how she caves step by step. We've seen what happened to Maloney. I have my doubt that she's really going to go all the way and confront the EU.
One thing I don't doubt, Martin, is that if Macron's going to get walloped, I mean, to what degree remains to be seen. Okay, Labour is going to form a government. We know that. But considering the problems that both countries have, a default position is foreign policy. The Russians are bad guys. We have to back Ukraine because that's in lieu of solving a multitude of problems that they can't seem to solve, either party, any party in the European Union. Go ahead, Martin.
Not necessarily. I think one of the things that that Le Pen may well consider doing is being the bad boy, being the rebellious veto vote on all big European Union decisions to get her way, to get her policies rushed through. And one of those decisions that she could veto, she could really make a huge noise about, is the EU funding of the Ukraine war, for example. I mean, I think she is going to play the blackmail card with the European Union to get her way, whether she gets those exemptions or not, and ultimately leads to a French referendum, which is the ultimate threat, because, you know, the EU can't really function without France. That's silly. But George's point about, all these EU rules and you're not being able to, changes to the rules on immigration. I mean, they will make changes. They will make exceptions. The exceptions are already happening. And when the European Union was first created, one of the beefs about from one of the complaints of a number of big other countries was that France negotiated a set of rules for itself, which included a whole list of exemptions. And there's no reason why they can't argue, a powerful founding nation like France, there's no reason why it can't argue again for new exemptions. You know, the problem is where does that start and where does it stop? Because Germany will ask for the same thing, you know. But my point is...
Okay, I'm sorry. For a long time. Hang on, let me just
we are heading towards...
passes so quickly, but we will have an opportunity a week from today to see if any of our predictions worked out. All right. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and in Marrakesh. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.